Hey, this is Kari Payton. I'm Cyborg from Teen Titans and Injustice and Injustice 2. And you're listening to The Night Nerd. So keep listening. Booyah!
Welcome to the Night Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Lance. It's Tuesday, so we're going to talk some TV and movies. This Friday is a pretty big day for retro gaming. We have the launch of the SNES Classic and the launch of Cuphead on Xbox One and PC. I'm really excited about both of these. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's really hard to say which one's my favorite, although I'd probably have to pick Cuphead if I had to. Yesterday, you know, we looked at all the games that were featured on the Super NES Classic, and so today I thought we'd kind of give Cuphead its due and look at a little bit of the history behind Cuphead, you know, some of the stuff that inspired it. Now, when I first saw a trailer for Cuphead a few years ago, I was floored. It knocked me on my feet. I fell in love with the game instantly because it had that Fleischer Studios classic animation style. And today, we're going to look at the Fleischer brothers and their studios. And a lot of people, you'll recognize their cartoons, you know who they are, what they are. I personally love the Fleischer studios. I have since I was a kid. You know, I recognized that it wasn't Disney, and it was still amazing. We'll look a little bit into that today. Now, as I was researching today's show, rediscovered, I guess you could say, my love for the Fleischers. And it's pretty safe to say that somewhere down the road, we're going to get an entire Fleischer week. Just fair warning. Their animation is beautiful and so groundbreaking that they deserve way more credit than they get. But the Fleischer Studios were founded in 1921 as Inkwell Studios by Max and Dave Fleischer. They were eventually bought up by Paramount back in the day, but they have contributed and created so many great characters. You know, they in the silent film era, they had Coco the Clown, who appeared in the Out of the Inkwell series, Betty Boop, Bimbo, Popeye the Sailor Man, and Superman. And all their designs and stuff, they were rough. To say, and not in a bad way, you know, they kind of had that edgy, almost underground thing. They focused more on adult themes than Disney did at the time. They were, you hear being a product of their time and stuff. Well, they were, in the sense that their characters, you know, lived in the Great Depression. They were part of the war. They did all these things that people dealt with, you know. They saw Disney as fairy tales and escapism, and they were, you know, to an extent still escapism, but wanted people to be more relatable to all of them. And a lot of it, you know, was kind of, we mentioned edgy, but there's a lot of sexuality and kind of racy overtones and things, especially with, you know, the Betty Boop and stuff. There's even nudity in some of their cartoons, and that because it was pre-code. So, and that design and style would influence a lot of people down the road. You know, some of the bigger names like Robert Crumb and Al Columbia, you would see, and Richard Elfman, you know. The Forbidden Zone is very much an homage to the Fleischers and their style. Like I said, they got started with Coco the Clown, and part of their success, part of the, you know, reason that they got to where they were was their inventions. I forgot how many copyright or patents and stuff they have on animation technology, but it's stuff that we still use today, you know, 100 years later. One of them is the rotoscope, which this was a way to help inlay animation on top of live action. And so a lot of out of the Inkwell series, which would feature, you know, an artist actually going over and drawing ink for his pen out of the Inkwell, and then whatever he drew would come to life and interact with him and do various things. And so it was really interesting, you know, to see that. That was something you didn't see a whole lot at the time. You know, it's mostly happy singing animals. Well, they weren't singing because it was silent, but, you know, just kind of being their thing. And then as sound came in, they were really, really big on getting down that technology and that science to where everything synced up, everything looked good. And it shows in their work, you know. They had a series of, screen songs that was kind of like the Merry Melodies or Silly Symphonies of the times, but again, more adult and darker and everything you wanted to see. Then they kind of, they introduced Betty Boop as more or less a background character in some of those, like a backup to Coco the Clown and stuff, but she became so popular because, you know, here was this little flapper girl in the Depression in the 30s, and just took off, and everybody loved her. So she got her own series of cartoons. It was just crazy, you know, how a character at that time was arguably one of the most recognizable faces in American cinema, especially animated, you know, to this day. So many people still love Betty Boop, get Betty Boop tattoos, that you can definitely see the legacy of her character as kind of the carefree, do whatever. Drawn Together had that character that was more or less Betty Boop, which was, well, more or less, but, you know, it was still a tip of the hat to Betty Boop. As it went on, you had Pie Pie the Sailor Man, who was really popular in comic strips, and so they decided to make him their kind of flagship, because by now you had had the Hays Code come into effect, which really cut down on the sexuality and stuff in cartoons and comics, and Paramount and Fleischer Studios thought that Pie Pie could be their competition to Mickey Mouse. And you can argue that. What they did with him that was cool was they made cartoons that were a little bit longer, you know. Not feature length, not the 76 plus minutes or whatever of Snow White and things, but definitely longer than the 7 or 8 minutes that the Mickey Mouse cartoons were. And some, you know, they still made those for Pie Pie, but then you still had, you know, he meets Alibaba, he meets Aladdin, meets Sinbad, that were really pretty popular. And they actually predated Snow White, so that's something that's really cool when you think about it. As time went on, they actually moved down to Miami, stole some people from Disney, because they wanted to work on this new, edgier stuff. Then they decided they were going to actually step up, and, you know, Snow White got all this critical love and all this praise. Well, they decided to make their own feature-length movie, and that was Gulliver's Travels. And on paper, Gulliver's Travels did better than Snow White. It made a lot of money. The critics loved it. They said, again, it always came back to that more realistic versus fantasy that Walt was known for. So they did that. It was only in 60 theaters for a month, and it made more than $3 million. So that should tell you something. So they made a second feature called Mr. Bug Goes to Town, and by all means, this was better than Gulliver's Travels, but it came out in December of 1941, so it was right before Pearl Harbor, and thusly, you know, people weren't going to the movies, they weren't caring about this stuff as much anymore, and they took a big hit. So it was kind of rough. but they eventually got the rights to Superman. Again, Paramount was looking for stuff to compete with Disney, and so they decided to step back a little bit and do just the shorts. And the Superman ones, their shorts, the budgets were almost the same as per minute, their budgets were the same as Pixar movies today. So adjusted for inflation and stuff, of course, but it worked. You know, they got nominated for Academy Awards. They just set all sorts of records and, you know, just still did so many great things. But they had, you know, lost enough money on Mr. Bug and everything that kind of just went downhill. And this is really when Paramount stepped in and started taking over things. They gave Famous Studios the Superman cartoons and Associated Artist Productions and United Artists went and took over Popeye stuff, and that was pretty much where they kind of fell out of favor. And for years they would always be, unfortunately, kind of the, we can't even say second fiddle, because you had Warner Brothers step up to the plate too, kind of the forgotten cartoons. You know, I think anybody who grew up in the 80s and 90s can remember going to any grocery store or even convenience store or your Targets, Kmarts, Walmarts, whatever, and there are those VHS, you know, 6 hours of cartoons, and most of those were Fleischer Studio cartoons, and that's what I remember. You know, it was like $2, so we definitely, my grandmother is the one, just quick backstory, who probably introduced me to my collecting problem, because she bought movies and bought movies. And if things were a good deal, she'd buy, I mean, she probably bought 12 of those 6 hour movies. You know, most of them had the same thing, but the covers were different, so she didn't know, so she just bought them. And we watched them, and that was how I got to fall in love with Popeye and Betty Boop and the Superman cartoons. Recently, you've seen some really good releases, even on Blu-ray. I have a nice little collector's edition on Blu-ray that has a big booklet in it. It's really beautiful. So yeah, these cartoons, you know, if you haven't watched them, go watch them. A lot of them are in public domain, so you can legally watch them on YouTube. But, you know, if you can find a good copy of them, I recommend picking them up, because they're just so great and so amazing that they deserve to be shared with the world. So, yeah. There you have it. That's kind of my very, very brief. I know this has turned out to be one of our longer shows, but in the grand scheme of things, brief praise and love for Max and Dave Fleischer and their studio and their cartoons. So go check them out. Also, make sure to check out Cuphead this weekend. It's going to be amazing. If you want to talk about any of these things, I would love, love, love to talk about them even more off mic. You can talk about it on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. Just look for The Night Nerd. If you want to talk to me directly, you can message me on any of those, or you can email me, TheNightNerd@Outlook.com, or just NightNerd@TheNightNerd.com. I respond to all of those, and again, love talking to everybody about stuff. Always get some really good conversations going. Make sure, if you're listening to us on iTunes or Google Play, click that like, subscribe button, leave us a good review. It's a lot of fun. Also, make sure you hit up the Facebook page, because we are starting this week, we are giving away a free year of Xbox Live Gold. Just pop on over there to learn more about it, learn what you can do to win that. We have a couple to give away, so we may give away more than one this time around. We'll see. Yeah, that's it. Make sure you're checking out Blah Blah Comics, Blah Blah Curse Words, and Family Sounds. I have been on both of those shows in the past couple of weeks, so definitely worth checking out. But that's going to be it for us. Again, I'm Lance. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Well, Cuphead and his pal Mugman, they like to roll the dice. By chance they came upon a devil's game, and gosh, they paid the price.